Hello, and welcome to The Inside Dish, where we explore the culinary, distillery, and the winery arts in and around the Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, host for your gastronomic tour of the region's amazing food and beverage scene. I'm here with Andrea Zaya, Executive Director of the National Museum of Industrial History in Bethlehem, and also Craig Larimer, a local beer historian with a special focus on Moravian brewing. And we're going to be talking about historical aspects of beer brewing in the Valley and beyond. Andrea and Craig, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thank you for having us.
Andrea, the NMIH has an exhibit entitled Cheers to 250 Brewing in America, starting in mid-May and going all the way through March 2027. And we're very pleased to be a sponsor of that here at WDIY. When I think of industrial history, I think of railroads and steel and big machines and everything. I don't necessarily think about beer.
Right.
So how do you reconcile where beer stands in industrial history?
Well, you know, you do bring up a good point. When we think of America's 250, we're all thinking about what does this mean for us? It's our semi-quincentennial. And it's an absolutely critical story to look at industrialization is who we are. So when we're looking at the brewing process, we're following a product, but we're really seeing that there were so many innovations and technological advancements pertaining to the brewing industry. Our predecessors in 1876 were faced with 100 years and considering who we are as a nation at that time. And at the Philadelphia Centennial in 1876, they had a featured exhibit, Brewer's Hall. And this was a huge building dedicated to the brewing industry at the time. It was a very powerful guild. Pennsylvania was and still is known for beer, and especially the lagering tradition. So we're sort of hearkening back in our 250th to those times in 1876 and kind of taking a look at the transition from colonial brewing, industrialized techniques, through to what it was like during 1876 to today.
And there are a lot of aspects of our industrial history that go into brewing as I started thinking about it, from transportation to refrigeration, sanitation, innovation. You mentioned steel and now aluminum, glass, everything.
Yeah. And we are so grateful to partner with a bunch of collectors and area organizations, one of which is the Forks of the Delaware Bottle Collecting Club. So if you're interested in seeing what some of those old bottles look like, bottles had been used to store liquid since the 15th, 16th centuries. But you're going to see kind of how those bottles changed when mineral water, sodas, and brewing was more industrialized. So we've got a lot of containers on display.
And Craig, what do we know about the earliest days of beer making and now what we call the Lehigh Valley?
Well, as a Moravian, I'm proud to declare that Moravians were not only prolific brewers, but prolific tasters, for lack of a better term. The art and craft of beer making in the Lehigh Valley started with the Moravians. The community almost immediately was settled in 1741, and just a few years later in Christiansbrunn, just about 12 miles north of here in the direction of Nazareth, they established a brewery. And it went well for a time. They furnished, and it was a big part of the economy too, and that's an important thing to mention. The brewing of beer wasn't just so they had something fizzy and fun to drink. The product was made because they needed a product to sell and support the general economy. So they were making beer for inns and taverns in Nazareth. The first inn in Bethlehem, which was not the Sun Inn, but rather the Crown Inn, over here on the south side. So it was big business. And Moravians were beer barons. So it started here. The Christiansbrunn Brewery, things didn't work out as planned. As it turns out, the brethren were enjoying sampling, maybe a little more than they were brewing. And so the Moravians moved the beer-making operation closer to home, directly behind the single brethren's house, which is the choir house for single men, Moravian single men. And the brewery was constructed back there in 1781, just after the Revolutionary War. So that's how it got started.
Yeah, and I understand you are doing a demonstration here in May about the Moravians brewing. What are you going to be doing? You're going to be brewing a batch of beer.
We are. And it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, beer, in effect, it's four ingredients. It's water, malted barley, hops, and yeast. But there's a lot of other things that go into it. It's tricky. It's like cooking. You know, you have to have the right temperature. You have to have the right ingredients. You have the right measure. You have to have the right cook temperature. You have to try to make it not taste and smell like smoke at the end. So we're going to be boiling over a 30-gallon copper kettle. It's quite a sight to behold. We have an open fire. We'll be boiling water. We'll be hand transferring that liquid from kettle to kettle, a little bit like a shell game, and transferring the hot water over milled grain and letting that steep for a little while. And then after it does steep and combine and breaks down some of those sugars, the fermentable sugars, we transfer that liquid, which is called wort, W-O-R-T, back into the boil kettle. And then after a while, we drop hops. And then we finally take that and put that in fermenters. And in about 2 weeks, we'll have beer. So we're going to do all of that stuff in full Moravian costume in recognition and honoring the gentleman at the Single Brethren's Brewery.
It tastes better when it's done in costume, right?
Well, we've done this a number of times. I've had a number of great people who've worked on the project with me over the years. My good friend Johan Sundloft will be working with me this year. We've been doing this for about 15 years. My good buddy Chris Bowen, who got us started in it, most of the equipment and most of my education came from Chris, so thanks, Chris, for all of that. And we've been doing this for about 15 years, a number of different ways, sometimes on the hottest day of the summer. But it attracts a crowd, and it's a fun story to tell. And it's, as you said in the introduction, it just gives everyone a start in understanding the history, as opposed to reading a textbook. Who wouldn't be interested in learning a little bit about beer and its connection to local history?
Right, exactly. What were some of the other breweries in the Lehigh Valley, maybe during the 1800s or 1900s, that kind of harkening back to that those days, you know, a little bit beyond the Moravians?
Well, locally in Bethlehem, there was Ohl's, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was the Supreme.
Yeah, that was South Side.
Supreme. And I think their slogan was, "It's a family favorite." So they made a small beer. And I think also something that we tend to not remember necessarily is that this was a safe beverage.
Right.
During earlier times when our water wasn't necessarily
questionable
guaranteed.
Sanitation,
yeah.
And hygiene, yes.
Yeah. And in Allentown, we had Neuweiler. Mm-hmm. There is a Neuweiler delivery truck on display at the museum, if anyone's interested in seeing that. And we also, we have a loaned artifact, a Neuweiler bottle that still has the beer in it. So we'll put that in a really safe spot so you can see that. And Craig, are there any other breweries that you recall?
Sure. Well, I think one that we have to talk about is the Old Monocacy Brewery, which was started by Johann Sebastian Gundi. Gundi was a German import himself who came to the colonies to be a Moravian professional commercial brewer. It started in North Carolina and then relocated here to the Lehigh Valley and was the head brewer at the Single Brethren's House for a number of years. And as I understand it, he may have been a bit headstrong and had better ideas about where the brewing should be done and how it should be done. So he moved the brewing operation just up between the corner of Market and Main Street. That's where his home was. But the brewery, if you just follow that path, there used to be a little alley called Gundy Alley that took you right down to the Monocacy Creek. The brewery was down at the creek. There was a brewery, a tavern, and a beer garden right next to the Luckenbach Mill. Down along the creek. So the Old Monocacy Brewery was really the third brewery in the Lehigh Valley. And then years after that, Widman's Brewery, which was located just behind the Hotel Bethlehem, which is then called the Eagle Hotel. Widman's and we mentioned Yule's Brewery. And Seitz Brewery was another brewery in Easton.
Easton, right.
Yeah, that was a partnership between Gundy and a relative of his, and they got the Seitz Brewery started. And then the others followed later in the 1800s.
Great. What effect did Prohibition have on the industry of beer? Certainly,
sure.
Beer was still being brewed, maybe not as visibly, right?
Sure. So for many, many decades, beginning probably during the Civil War or before, there were many groups trying to raise awareness, temperance societies. And they were really pointing to perhaps that beer is the culprit behind immorality or other kinds of undesirable behavior. And so during Prohibition, then they were able to kind of repeal, they were able to make then the sale of beer illegal. However, many breweries decided that they needed to stay afloat. And so they were creating other kinds of products like ice cream. And Yingling, very famously, D.G. Yingling created ice cream during that time. And I think they then brought that recipe back not too long ago, but I believe they're no longer producing the ice cream. But Pabst, maybe, still producing. And it's kind of interesting that we have on display at the museum a series of malt labels. So, you know, looking at like artwork and marketing and advertising, these labels are really incredibly done. So during Prohibition, they were selling malt, but they were saying, don't do, you know, step one, don't do step two, don't do step three, or you might end up with beer.
Right.
So it was still, you know, some people were still doing perhaps some early home brewers at the time.
Right. Was there innovation that happened from an industrial standpoint after Prohibition? Which I know a lot of times we started getting scale breweries with everything that was going on with refrigeration and transportation.
Right. So our infrastructure is building. We had highways, rail, of course, and refrigerated rail car being able to get that product further and further away to consumers at a greater distance to the breweries. There was an interesting collaboration between the American Can Company and Kubler Brewing in New Jersey. And I think Kubler then came over towards Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And they created a can, and initially these were steel cans, and they had to kind of troubleshoot because the liquid is under pressure. So how do we keep these cans from exploding? They then went into, and there was a special liner that helped them create that, and it was actually Mr. Coors, who was a chemist at the Coors Brewery, who was helping to design some of these early innovations of liners. And then they switched over to aluminum cans. So if you're a fan of cans, we also have probably about 500 cans on display at the museum, and you can take your picture in front of our wall of cans.
Coming out of Prohibition, we talked about the scaling of a lot of breweries getting larger, being able to transport. I remember reading that coming into the 1800s, 1900s, we had 6,000, 7,000 breweries in this country because it was all local. People would gather there, and you couldn't transport the beer. After you could transport and you had packaging that you could do it, we actually went down to 49 breweries in the United States in the 1980s. And I would think that that is part of the idea of industrialization that happened with a lot of food products here in the country.
You know, I was recently talking with a historian, a professor emeritus, John Smith from Lehigh University, and we were talking about just this. What happened to this, like, diversification of the hometown brewery? And he started doing some research. We have a very interesting lecture coming up in October. He pointed to the big contracts at the major league stadiums being perhaps a reason why we see some of the local breweries going out of business and in favor of these large conglomerations. So that's kind of interesting. And we really do see that then by like the 1980s or so. And you might recall those really interesting beer commercials, like, what was it? Less filling.
Tastes great, less filling.
Right, yeah. And there were all these sports characters who were involved in the marketing of this. But I think that not too long after that, we start to see the craft beer movement rising. And one of the earliest sort of champion of the craft beer movement was Anchor Steam. And you might remember Anchor Steam Beer. They just unfortunately went out of business, I think maybe last year or the year before. But it was purchased by one of the Maytags. And he purchased 51% of this company. He wanted to figure out, how do we get this to taste better? So he focused on high quality, more local ingredients. And then all of a sudden, people are like, this beer tastes great. So I think we see a resurgence. And then locally, too, the craft beer movement in Pennsylvania, it's, I think we produce 4 million barrels.
Well, we're the number two producer in the entire country. Pennsylvania is,
yeah.
I mean, it helps that we have Yingling and Samuel Adams over there on I-78. And speaking of I-78, that's really kind of evidence of what happened with the industrial nature of beer. I mean, that's a big manufacturing plant that was Schaefer that went in 1972.
back at that time where there were, again, less than 100 breweries in the country. And it was right here in the valley that we saw that. It's quite a step from the Moravians.
Yeah, absolutely. I just remember as a kid, a rainy summer day and mom and dad having no idea what to do with the three boys and driving over to Schaefer Brewery and getting the brewery tour. And then you exit and you'd have a root beer and a couple of hard pretzels. And it was a good day. You know, it was a fun...
It was a good day for mom and dad.
It was a good day for dad, for sure. But yeah, I mean, it come a long way since then. But as we were talking about earlier, you know, it's that spirit of innovation, crafting, hard work. It's 90% custodial. People stroll over, and the way we're doing it, the colonial style, is particularly strenuous and odd and hard. But these local brewers putting a lot of time into it, extra time, and then research, and they're doing their own marketing, and they're doing their own promotion, and it's a lot of hard work. So support them.
That's right. Andrea, how can people find out more information about this exhibition? Mm-hmm.
Yes, go to our website, please, at nmih.org. And we are open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 to 5. So you can just stop in at the museum, and you can also sign up to be on our email list. So we'll give you some early information about upcoming events.
Great. Andrea Craig, thank you for joining us here at WDIY and talking about beer, one of my favorite subjects.
This was great. Thank you,
Thank
Mike.
You.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish.